Man, I'm excited just to kind of wrap up this little adventure we've had in the book of Ruth. Today, we're going to cover the whole fourth chapter, which means I'm going to try to keep this kind of tight today, kind of a little bit shorter. So we're not going to be able to get into as much of the nitty-gritty detail of what's going on as we have in some of the previous weeks, but we're still going to kind of get the gist. We're going to get the gist of it and ultimately wrap up with how this points to Christ, which is the most important thing anyway, because this is our Christmas celebration, looking to Christmas, remembering Christmas, Jesus coming to us as a baby. So let's jump right in here to Ruth chapter 4. And actually, before we pull up the screen, the words, we're covering all of this. We've been talking about these as four acts in a drama. And now that we're coming to the conclusion, the fourth quarter of this book, as we work through this, you're going to start to see there's a lot of, where there was a lot of similarity in these middle two acts, there was a lot of parallels and a lot of things happening kind of the same but different. As we work through this fourth act, we're going to see there's a lot of contrast and really a lot of resolution to so many of the problems that came up in the first act. As things go through in the fourth act, we're going to start to see a lot of solutions, okay? So just be thinking about that as we work through, and I'll point some of those things out as we go. But it's really pretty beautiful the way this all just kind of is wrapped up in a little Christmas bow for the reader and for the audience of this story. So let's just jump in with Ruth 4 in verse 1. It says, "Now Boaz had gone up to the gate, the gate of Bethlehem, the entrance, and he sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by." Remember, Ruth goes to Boaz and says, "Hey, you're a near relative. You're supposed to redeem this property, this land, and take care of us. Take care of me and Naomi." And Boaz, being the honorable man, the worthy man that he is, he says, "Actually, there is a closer relative than I, and so we need to, at least I need to give him the opportunity to redeem this land before I do." So the place of business in these days was the entrance of the city gate. Why? It kind of makes sense. It's like you didn't have cell phones or any, like, and it was a little impolite to just like yell through the town like, "Yo, what's up?" So they would go to the gate, right? The entrance of the city, because that's where people had to cross. It was like, I know, you ever go out in your front yard, like you never see your neighbors, but if you actually go and just sit in your front yard long enough, or you sit in the same place long enough, eventually you see people and you meet people and you get to connect with people. If you just hang out for 1 minute, or if you ever at a like public place with your kids and you tell them, like, if you ever get lost, what do you tell them to do? Just one, find like a nice adult, find somebody. But another important option is just stay where you are, right? The more you run all over the place, the less chance I have of finding you, okay? So they go to the gate because that's where everybody has to cross through and pass. And I know if I wait here long enough, brother's gonna come by and we're gonna connect. We're gonna touch base. So Boaz said, "Turn aside, friend. Sit down here." Very interesting word that Boaz uses. It's translated "friend" here. In Hebrew, it's like, it's really sounds really kind of weird. It's like meloni peloni, something like that. It's like the, but it basically means, it's usually used for places when you're talking about like, oh, like such and such a place. A place that you doesn't even really have a name. And it's this weird textual thing where it's kind of like, this man is being referred to as like so-and-so. Or you could really almost say like nobody. This guy is a nobody. And this is tied to this idea in Jewish culture where if someone refuses to redeem a kinsman's land when he has the opportunity to do so, that man's name is discontinued in the land of Israel. And so it's kind of like a clue textually that they're already saying, like, this man, he's not even important enough for him to actually be named in this story. His name doesn't even matter. Even though in the story we don't really want him to redeem the land, we kind of want Boaz to do it anyway, but we still are, like, throwing shade on this guy for not stepping up and doing what he's supposed to do. But we'll see that in a minute. But it's giving us a little clue of that here already. Turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside, he sat down, and he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, hey, sit down. This is just what they did. They're like, hey, we got to have a conference. We have an important matter to discuss here. So they sat down. They said to the redeemer, this is what he said to the man, to nobody, to so-and-so. Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. Well, wait a second. Wait. Naomi is selling? What in the world? I thought land didn't pass to, Naomi didn't own this land. Land doesn't pass on to widows. It passes on to sons. What does this even mean? Again, it's really kind of frustrating, like, how some things are translated. But the sense that Naomi is selling this land is a sense, it's a very generic word that's here. It's really the idea that Naomi is, like, wanting someone to redeem this land, right? It's not hers to sell, but she is the one who is wanting someone to redeem this land so that she can be taken care of, okay? That's really the idea here. It's not that Naomi owns the land and is going to be profiting and getting money from this sale, okay? Just an important thing. Verse 4, so I thought I would tell you of it today and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people, if you will redeem it, right, to buy it, purchase it back. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you. He's like, I'm next in line, right? It's like Facebook Marketplace, next, right? It's like, and then they never show. But Boaz shows up, okay? And he says, so the guy, he says, I will redeem it. I will buy this land, and I will redeem the land. Great. Interesting. Problem solved, right? Okay, well, but now Boaz says, in verse 5, now, so-and-so, one other thing. The day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire the widow of the dead. Now, again, in the Hebrew wording of this is very interesting. In Hebrew, all it says is, you also acquire the widow of the dead. It doesn't say Ruth the Moabite. That's something that translators put in there because it seems that's likely the clarification Boaz is making here. But in Hebrew, it just says, the day you buy the field from Naomi, you also acquire the widow of the dead. And so there's kind of an ambiguity here, actually. The widow of the dead, which widow? Do you acquire Naomi? Do you acquire Ruth? Most people think it's Ruth for different reasons, but there's good reason to think it could also be Naomi. It could also be saying, I acquire Ruth. And so there's a lot of stuff here that doesn't ultimately change the big picture meaning of anything. I'll explain in a minute. And it has to do with this statement that comes next. Whoever acquires whomever, the whole purpose of it is to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance. In order to perpetuate the name of the dead. That was the whole purpose of this redemption and this protecting these widows, was that so that the name of Elimelech or Mahlon, or in this case Mahlon, because Mahlon was Ruth's deceased husband, was to perpetuate their family name in their own land. This was just a big, important cultural thing that mattered to them. And so that's the whole point. Now, the redeemer responds to this and he says, whoa, I can't redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. So what's happening here? Initially, the guy says, oh yeah, I'll purchase this land back for Naomi and Ruth. But then Boaz goes a step further. He says, actually, you've also got to perpetuate the name of the deceased man. Again, whether he's talking about Elimelech or Mahlon, you need to provide an heir. You need to take one of these women as your wife and have a child, at which point that child would be the rightful heir and owner of all of that land. So the guy is like, you know, you're now, at first this was going to be my land, but now you're saying I've got to like instantly like buy this land and then basically give it all away to this child that's going to be born. And I'm responsible for all this. And it was like, and Boaz is like laying it on thick. He's like, this is what you got to do. And the guy's like, ah, man, everybody's watching, right? The elders are there. It's all public. So he can't like play any tricks on Boaz or anything like that. Like that's why they did this collectively to make sure everything was done honorably. So the guy's like, ah, man, well, if I've got to do that too, like, fine. You just do it, Boaz. I cannot redeem it for myself. It'll impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it. Now, there's so many other intricate legal aspects to this that I just don't have time to go into, but what I've said already is like the gist of it to get the point across of what's ultimately happening here. So verse 7 gives us an interesting just little picture into ancient culture in Israel. It says now, verse 7, now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, the one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was the manner of attesting and confirming a transaction in Israel. So when the Redeemer said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, he drew off his sandal and showed, this is, like, that's just a funny kind of cool thing. It's like, well, they didn't have pens, right, to some visual symbol to seal this deal. It's just kind of cool to think about, like, that's what they came up with, right? Like, well, here you go, you know, it's just kind of funny. History is really, really cool and fun. Verse 9, Boaz said to the elders and the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi. Again, he didn't buy it from Naomi, but again, that's the idea, is it's for her. It's for her benefit. I've bought from Naomi, from the hand of Naomi, all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and to Mahlon. Also, Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I've bought to be my wife. To the reason for all of this, that he redeemed all of this family and all of this land, to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You are witnesses this day. The idea of a name in ancient times was a big, big deal. And names were tied to places. Like, we see this throughout the Old Testament. We don't really think much about it, but like the land, the land of Judah, the land of Simeon, the land of Issachar, the land of Zebulun, the land of Dan, like all of these tribal areas and family areas, big picture, and then there were smaller pockets of land that were tied to specific family names, and then even more specifically, the specific land of Elimelech, the land of the Ephrathites. All of these names and these things were very important because ultimately, even though they may have changed hands temporarily from time to time, every 50 years, 49 years, the year of Jubilee, all of that land would, no matter what deals had been done, they would all go back to the name, to the owners and the families of those lands. Something we talked about a few weeks ago. So this idea of the name is really, really significant and important. And notice how Boaz is doing all of this willingly, not for his own name, not to perpetuate his own honor and his own fame and his own land, but he's doing it completely for the benefit of Elimelech's name and his family, for Mahlon and Chilion and for Ruth and Naomi, so that they can be secure. It's really beautiful. In verse 11, then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, so there's more than elders at this point. It's like this has become a public spectacle. All the people, kind of like we saw at the beginning of the act, like all the people and the women were like, whoa, like the whole town came out. Now the whole town has come out to see the resolution of this thing. They all said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah. Again, allusions, major allusions happening. Don't have time to go into all of these details. But you see something like this, and it's like, huh, how about I go back and read the stories of Rachel and Leah and see what kind of connections there are, because it's crazy. But may her house be like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house, the family of Israel. A Moabite, a Gentile woman. They're saying, may her house be like the house of the mothers of the house of Israel. May you act, here's that word again, worthily. Chayil. May you act worthily in Ephrathah. Again, important family name. May you be renowned in Bethlehem. May your house, your family, be like the house of what? Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Remember that story we talked about last week? They're like, and Perez's family line was the one that ultimately, even though it came from some very sketchy beginnings, God worked through all of that. So it was Perez and his family line and his descendants that would bring us to Boaz. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord will give you by this young woman. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, in verse 13. I think we're there, yeah. She became his wife, he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then, remember this choir, this chorus of women, the women of the town. In Act 1, as Naomi and Ruth came into town, they were like, is this Naomi? And we have that big scene, that big interaction. Naomi responds to them, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. Because God has returned me to this place empty. But now the women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. The redeemer now is not Boaz, now it's this child that's been born. The Redeemer is the child now. He shall be to you a restorer of life. The word restore here is the Hebrew word shuv. Just like in Act 1, where they turned to go to Moab, then they turned shuv, they turned to go back to Israel. And Naomi says in Act 1, God has returned me empty. Shuv. God has shuved me here, Naomi says. But now this child, God, this child, because of him and God's, Yahweh's blessing through this child, he shall be to you a shuver. It's like Hebrew-English. Spanglish is really easy to say. I don't know how I'd say it, Hebrew English. He's a restorer. He's going to turn your life around. And we're seeing this transformation of her story, even just linguistically. This is so beautiful and poetic. A turner of your life, restorer, returner, and a nourisher of your old age, your twilight years. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, she's actually more to you than seven sons. That's a pretty significant statement. She's given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. One, that's kind of wild and crazy how that's even a thing, how that's possible. It's apparently possible. It's a thing. It was a thing in ancient times. It's amazing. It's incredible. But beside the biological miraculousness of how this works, and it is a thing, this is an important allusion as well. I'm just going to touch on it briefly. There's a story of another mom in Israel's history who lost a child, and that child came into the possession of another, and then that child ended up being reared by his rightful mother, and that child, that mother, was responsible for raising the one who would ultimately be her redeemer, the one who would ultimately be her rescuer and the rescuer of all of her people. And I already heard someone say it, it's Moses. When Pharaoh's daughter went looking to the Hebrew people for someone to nurse Moses, somehow she found his actual mother, and she nursed him until he was old enough to go back and live in Pharaoh's palace. But you have this picture of the mother nourishing and nurturing and raising a child that would ultimately grow up to be her salvation. And we're seeing it here in Naomi's story. And obviously, you've already made the connection to the story and birth of Jesus and this incredible, crazy thing that Mary has to process, that I'm like mothering the angels. They're telling me that this is going to be the one, our Savior, our Messiah, our Redeemer, the one who's going to save all of Israel. And this is like my baby, right? Like, this is crazy. This beautiful allude, this looking back and looking forward that we get to do with this story. It's just incredible. But she nursed him. Verse 17, the women, again, the women of the neighborhood gave him a name. This is fascinating. The women, these women, the town's women, they're the ones that named the baby. This community thing. This is kind of cool. We kind of do that still. We kind of like poll, like, what names? We kind of mess around with the names. And we're like, and you kind of vote. We're like, if you're willing to share the name. Some people are like, I don't even want to share the name I'm thinking of because I don't want to deal with all the opinions. But some people find it kind of fun and fascinating. Like, what do you think about? But the women, they're just like, this is his name. Here's what they say. A son has been born to Naomi. Notice how all of this revolves around Naomi. Again, like we talked about, Naomi is the main character of this story and the arc of her circumstances. A son has been born, not to Ruth. A son has been born to Naomi. Boaz and Ruth have this child, and they gift this child to Naomi. This is now Naomi's child, her redeemer, her heir, the one who's going to continue the family name of Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion. In their land, a son has been born to Naomi. They named him Obed. The Hebrew word Obed, or Eved, is really kind of how it's pronounced. Eved, you might see it in other names and characterizations of people in the Old Testament if you read the Old Testament carefully. This is the word that means servant. Or sometimes it's used to refer to slaves, but its basic meaning is this is a servant, one who serves. A son has been born to Naomi. They named him servant. Obed was the father of Jesse, the father of David. The story began with three deaths, Elimelech, Mahlon, and Chilion, and it now ends with the birth, this conclusion of three births, Obed, Jesse, David. This completion and complete turning around of this situation. Not just any three people, but culminating in the birth of the greatest king in Israel's history ever, other than Jesus. Now, it ends with this interesting genealogy, which people, you can go wild with Hebrew genealogies. Okay, I'm not going to go way too into this, but just to touch on it. These are the generations, again, of Perez. Here, his name is again. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. If you're looking for names, by the way, this is a great list. Amminadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. By the way, do you remember who Salmon's wife was? It was a woman named Rahab from a place called Jericho, who happened to be a lady of the night, right? Like, this was all throughout this story, there's these very sketchy connections that happen and ways that God just is working out his story of redemption through these very intensely normal and even very less, almost less than normal, almost like actively not okay people, right? But how God works out his plan through all of this, it's pretty crazy. But anyway, Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse, and Jesse fathered David. There's 10 names here. Five of them appear before the Exodus. Five of them appear after the Exodus. This is also something that tells us there's some allusion happening to the Exodus and Moses, right? The Exodus being like the central turning point in this genealogy. It's just, again, another literary textual thing. Seems like, again, reading through genealogies in the Old Testament, it's kind of like just trying to get through it, but if you really just kind of sit in them and find these names and do these things, like, or at least read from somebody who did do the work on doing that, you can just kind of read how their conclusion about it, that's at least counts too. But it's pretty beautiful, and that's how it ends. Everything that was broken and messed up was made right. Boaz paid the price for the land just so he could give it away when the rightful heir was born. That's incredible. Boaz didn't seek to perpetuate his own name, but the name of another. And Obed was born to be a redeemer, a restorer of life, and a nourisher for Naomi. But Naomi would have to raise him and sustain him as a child. Now, in the short term, all of this was setting the stage for the birth of David, right? The story literally ends with David and clearly is pointing to David, and in a lot of manuscripts and even in our Bibles, the very next book in our Bibles, at least, is 1 Samuel, which is where we're introduced to David and his rise to being king in Israel. But in the bigger story that God was writing, God's, again, story of redemption that we trace through all of Scripture, the story of Ruth, Naomi, Boaz, and Obed, it's really setting the stage for the birth of another Redeemer who would come about 1,000 years later, But crazy, in the very same town of Bethlehem, the house of bread. And Jesus came, how? In the form of a servant. We read in Philippians chapter 2. He paid the ultimate price to redeem us from bondage to sin and death, to redeem us from spiritual poverty, so that we could become sons of God and heirs of an eternal inheritance. That even includes land. When you think about it, the new heavens, the new earth, the kingdom, there's going to be a land, a place, a physical place that we are going to inherit because of what he has done. He is our restorer of life and the nourisher of our souls. And as I've talked about a couple times throughout this series, it's very much within us to want to see these characters, and we see the positive examples in Boaz and in Ruth especially, and we can't help but not want to kind of be like them. Like, man, I want to be like Boaz. Man, I want to be like Ruth. Like, these guys are amazing. And that's not wrong to do that. But the reality in this story, when we ask the question like, okay, who are we in the story? At the end of the day, we are all Naomi. And Jesus is our Boaz. Jesus is our Ruth. Jesus is our Obed. And even our David, if we carry that line further. Really, if we're doing that song at the end, right, you guys could really come up at this point. Really, life, more often than not, as we just kind of close and reflect on this story, life often feels more like the bitter beginning of Naomi's story than the pleasant ending. And we know that Jesus is our Redeemer, right? We know all this information. We know that he's risen. We know that he's coming again. I should like stand here and preach to all everyone because everyone's now behind me. That's so awesome. We know all of these things. We know all of this information. But we're in this period of waiting. Right, we know all this information, but he hasn't come yet. He hasn't come yet. The world is still broken. We're still here. It's still messed up. And we're just waiting. And that's really what this season is about. That's what Advent is about. That's what Christmas is about. But unlike Naomi and Ruth and their situation, we're not waiting in desperation. Like Naomi's situation was pretty desperate, right? We're waiting in a sense of hope. Like we have hope and this expectation of what Jesus is going to do. And that's what Advent is about. That's what Christmas is about. It's what we're celebrating this coming week. Really the hope that we have in Christ. No matter what comes our way, no matter what our circumstances look like in the middle of the story or the beginning of the story, like we read in Naomi, we ultimately know that it's not the end of the story. That's a beautiful thing. That's Ruth.